Welcome back. We're joined by Raymond Stock. He is one of our duty experts on matters involving the Middle East, most especially Egypt, where he lived for many years. He is currently a Middle East Forum Shulman Ginsberg Writing Fellow and working on a biography of the famous Egyptian Nobel laureate in literature, Naguib Mahfouz. As I say, brings to the present topic a deep knowledge of Egypt. But before we get to that, I want to talk with you about a colleague that you knew well. I knew a little and was privileged to have on our show with regularity, Dr. Barry Rubin, who passed away at a very early age earlier this week. And Raymond, I just would like to get your sense of both the contribution Barry made to understanding of the kinds of issues you work on and the loss that his passing represents to all of us at such a time.
Well, thank you, Frank, for having me again, and also for asking me particularly about Barry Rubin, because I always thought of him as our invincible lion of wisdom. He's just an extraordinary. He was an extraordinary figure who understood cultural as well as political matters on a very broad range and a very broad scale. And he simply outshone all of his contemporaries in this field, in the field of Middle East politics, because of the breadth of his knowledge and the honesty and the perceptiveness of his analysis. He's cut right through everything to see the innate contradictions in majority position most of the time, and he simply destroyed conventional wisdom.
He also, I think, as Dr. Michael Rubin, no relation, told us yesterday on this program, Raymond, that he was unhindered by the kind of moral equivalence that is much in evidence in the field of Middle East studies, it seems. He made no bones about understanding the difference between right and wrong and lining up with the right and harshly criticizing the wrong and those who failed to do the same.
Yes, he simply failed to honor all the usual hypocritical restraints that people observe in much political discourse, and most of it, in fact, and increasingly it's more and more prevalent. He suffered from this enormously. He both internally and externally, in the sense that he was reviled and defamed by quite a few people who never understood his actual position. He was, for example, a liberal, but he was a liberal in the true sense of the term, as he would define it, which is someone who seeks the truth, someone who is willing to take on the establishment, but not a progressive, as the term has come to be embraced, also call themselves liberals now, but who are really more, much more radical than the old liberals were. He was almost an 18th century liberal, as compared to the current crop of liberals.
In truly the best sense of the word. You know, one of the other things that Michael shared with me, which I'm sure you were very much aware of, was Barry Rubin felt, as a result of his family history with untimely deaths, that he was racing the clock, really. He knew his mortality better than most of us at an earlier age, and his productivity as a result, is really something to behold. I think 13 books and countless articles and blog postings and speeches and lectures and the like. As you look at this body of work, is this distinctive not simply by its quantity, but also by its quality?
By both. Definitely by both. I mean, he wasn't quite able to maintain the same, typographical consistency in his final illness. But he did continue right to the end his intellectual.
Yeah, no, I think he had a posting 2 days before he died or something. It was unbelievable.
The last article he published was on January 21st.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And it became a bit less frequent as he grew more ill, but unless he continued in the circuit. He was writing articles while he was in hospital.
I know. I know. Let me ask you specifically about something that he literally wrote the book on, namely the Muslim Brotherhood. It's an outfit you've studied closely, and his book, The Muslim Brotherhood, The Organization and Policies of a Global Islamist Movement, you'd think should be required reading, certainly in official Washington these days. At the moment that the land you've spent so much time in, Egypt has remanded the Muslim Brotherhood to a terrorist and banned organization following its year or so at the pinnacle of power in Egypt. The president of the United States is continuing his engagement with, embrace of, legitimation of, for sure, and I guess in some cases at least enabling of the Muslim Brotherhood. Notably, recently Adam Credo of the Washington Free Beacon reported that he met with a fellow by the name of Anas Altikriti, who is a prominent fixture in Muslim Brotherhood circles in Britain these days, said, so among others, by David Cameron, Prime Minister of Britain. What is going on here? And more to the point, what are the implications of ignoring the kinds of insights that you and Barry Rubin and others have had about the nature of the Brotherhood and its threat to all of us?
Well, the consequences are disastrous, I believe, and disastrous all along, going back to the Egyptian Revolution, how it was mishandled by this administration. Clearly, the love affair continues between the Obama administration and the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, there's simply no that they continue to reach out for it and continue to speak, if only sotto voce, you know, to a degree, you know, so they don't. It's not part of his major speeches that the president makes, but he does continually pursue this policy of trying to incorporate them in everything to do with Middle East politics. In virtually every field of conflict right now in the Middle East is all conflict at the moment, you basically find the United States pushing the Muslim Brotherhood forward.
What are the implications of that in, let's just take two specific examples, Syria and Iraq, as you see it, Raymond Stock?
Well, I think that the strategy that the Obama administration followed prior to the big incident, you know, the still animus threat of a military strike that the president made back in the summer, late summer and early fall. The policy they were following then, and we've gotten murkier since, was of trying to bolster Islamist movements. Actually, they would consider them resistance movements. They would not emphasize they were Islamist, but they were, in fact, Islamist groups, mainly dominated by the Muslim Brotherhood, that were favored by Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey. We were sending arms indirectly. We were facilitating the shipment of arms purchased by the Qataris and the Saudis, as reported by the New York Times, at least. Through Turkey, and they were going into the Syrian rebel camp. We don't really know if that program actually stopped. We know that they intended to increase this activity and train. And the president, I think, announced back in the early summer, last summer, that he was going to authorize a training and further arming of these groups. Of course,
these groups are the Muslim Brotherhood at best, and at worst, an assortment of like-minded Islamists who seek the imposition of Sharia and our destruction, including al-Qaeda elements.
Precisely, and the Muslim Brotherhood itself seeks our destruction.
Of course, of
course. No matter how they tend to go about it.
Yeah,
and they also are aligned with these other groups. So that there's no real difference between them.
To the extent that we find ourselves now at such odds with the Egyptian government over this very fundamental question, whether to, imprison Muslim Brotherhood operatives or have them over for tea at the White House, where does this leave us with, arguably, as you know better than most, one of the most important countries in the region? Very quickly, Raymond.
With Iraq or with Egypt?
I'm talking about Egypt.
It leaves us out in the cold, basically. I mean, in terms of popular opinion, in terms of future Egyptian government policy, they are developing more and more alternatives to our assistance and to our in the alliance with the United States.
And no good can come of that, I'm afraid. Raymond, we have to let you go. I'm so sorry. We are just hard out of time. I want to thank you for the great work you do at the Middle East Forum and for joining us from time to time. Come back very soon, if you would. I hope the rest of you will come back again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.